Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Mary, what'd you do this weekend?
Well, we had a really good time this weekend. So if for those of you that have caught up on the show, I had Zach Schulman on last week. He's the organizer of Ferment Ferment, which is a yearly free fermentation festival held in Brooklyn, New York. So Chris and I participated in that on Sunday. I taught a short mead workshop, and I think I mentioned this last week, but both of the short meads turned out beautifully. So there were two Green Market short meads, a beet short mead with star anise, and then I did an apple pie short mead with, of course, fresh local apples and then some spices. So that was pretty exciting. Those recipes will be up on my blog, mylifeoncraft.com. I'm going to say in the next 2 weeks, I haven't blogged over a year, I'd say. But I'm going to get back to that this week because there's so many good things I want to share with everybody.
That beet short mead was ridiculous.
Yes.
Kind of a weird flavor, but a great, great flavor.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody is a fan of beets. Let's admit that. I didn't encounter beets until I think I was in my 30s. They never were a part of my childhood or any time after that until, I don't know, I moved to New York City, I guess. But
It was dearthy and lovely.
And then on Saturday, we were super fortunate to participate in Allagash Brewing Company had released a new Saison. It's the Century Saison.
Mm-hmm. Delicious.
And so they celebrated with having Saison Day at bars across the country. So there were two in New York City, the Blind Tiger in Manhattan, and then Three's Brewing, which is one of the newer brewery restaurants in Brooklyn. And in conjunction with that, the local rep, Allagash rep, Kristen, who is an amazing person, coordinated a homebrew competition. So eight of us were invited. Brooklyn Homebrew helped out in the selection. Eight of us were invited to brew a Saison for that. Rob Todd, owner of Allagash, and Greg, who is the head brewer
Greg
at Three's.
Drowski.
Yes, Greg Drowski. I totally had a mind blank there. Whew, sorry, Greg. Head brewer at Three's Brewing judged, and then there was a people's choice. Anyway, I made a passion fruit mosaic hop Saison. It turned out really beautifully. It was a little untraditional for the judges, although I did get very good compliments, so I did not take place. Big congratulations to Brett Taylor, Jason Saylor, and Zach Kinney for taking first, second, and third place in the Saison competition.
Torres for the people's choice.
And Eric Lane,
and
his
Eric
brewing
Lane
partner.
Together, that's right.
Yep. So great Saisons, lots of good people there. It was so much fun, and it was a really good excuse for me to brew a recipe that I've never brewed with passion fruit before, at least in a beer. So it was a good excuse to try that out. It worked out really beautifully, and I'm definitely looking forward to brewing that exact same beer again, which doesn't happen very often. It was also a good excuse to do a full 5.5-gallon batch, which I haven't done in a while either, because I usually do 2 or 3 gallons.
It was cool. The blend was great. Also, Saison Day always makes me think of Taizan Day. I don't know if you remember Taizan Day. Chocolate rain. So, awesome stuff. I love that stuff. And this
there
is totally
Blake,
off topic.
There are
has
Blake
to do with
stairs
beer.
In the
I know,
studio.
It's awesome. But check it out. As a musician, I'd be remiss not to exclaim my excitement about this. Recently, a video came out with Taizan Day singing the ABCs to John Coltrane's Giant Steps, and it's freaking awesome. Look it up on YouTube. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Anyway, go for it. It's awesome. Taizan Day. I love you, man.
So that was on Saturday. And then going back to Ferment for Men, I would be remiss not to mention how great the event was. There are so many people attended. People brought all kinds of absolutely amazing fermented things, from alcoholic beverages to non-alcoholic beverages, all kinds of sauerkrauts and hot sauces and pickles and cheese and bread and spreads and everything. So,
ooh, food. What a great topic.
Wait, I want to mention, though, because I did try two new recipes for the event. So as some of you know out there, Chris and I have a sourdough starter going. And a lot of times, you know, if you're not using your sourdough starter regularly to make bread or something else with it, you have to discard some of it, which is always very sad. It's very heartbreaking for me anyway.
I left a whole bread starter in... and I never made bread with it when I went to Australia for 2 weeks.
Yes, it's a massive science experiment that I am waiting for Chris to clean out.
It's black and moldy. It's fucking awesome.
But besides that, getting back to sourdough starter. So it's always a sad day when you have to discard sourdough starter. So I made a really quick and easy recipe that I actually found on the King Arthur Flour website. It's for sourdough crackers. And I've made crackers before, but man, I have to say these are absolutely delicious. The sourdough starter, they're just super like umami and savory and really quick and easy. I mean, very few ingredients. It's just flour, your sourdough starter, a little bit of salt and some butter. And it takes, you know, about 3 minutes to mix up. 20 minutes to bake. Super easy. I would highly recommend it. And then I took a miso class a year ago. So I have, it was a rice miso, and I've been aging that. It's really nice, very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm looking at our guests. Yes, a lot of umami, but super deliciousness. So I made a cashew miso spread with that. I just took raw cashew nuts, put them through a food processor. So I got kind of a rough, you know, crunchy cashew butter, and then combine them with the miso and a little bit of water just to give it the right consistency. Anyway, those are two of my new addictions, and I am going to make more of them this week, and that's all I want to live on for the next 2 weeks. So anyway, I would highly recommend those if you have some miso at home. That's a great way to use it. And again, if you're keeping a sourdough starter and you're as sad as I am when you have to discard, I would recommend this sourdough cracker recipe that's on kingarthurflour.com.
I like that. And we'd be remiss. Final announcement before we go. Before we start our show. The National Homebrewers Conference, or the National Homebrew Competition, is currently taking place in various cities around the country. And if you are a registered BJCP judge, they need and want your help. You could go to, I believe it's homebrewcompetition.com.
You can actually just go to homebrewersassociation.org/competitions. And that will take you there. There's 10 more sites, left to judge. There are, I think, 4 sites are judging this weekend, including ours. So a lot of the sites still need judges and stewards and other volunteers. So please go check that out if you're interested in volunteering. And one last announcement that we would be...
You do not need to be BJCP certified to sign up to steward and find out what in a competition like this how it runs.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is the world's largest international beer competition, so it's super exciting to take part in that. Last but not least, Bitter and Esther's, which is a local homebrew store here in Prospect Heights neighborhood of Brooklyn, is welcoming Michael Tonsmere, who is a.k.a. the Mad Fermentationist, author of American Sour Beers. So Michael's going to stop by from 4 to 8. He's going to be signing his book and talking all kinds of sour beer action. And I've heard rumors he's also going to bring some very special beers to share. So that's 4 to 8. Find out more information at bitterandesters.com.
You may remember episodes on this show featuring Tommy Harder, one of our favorite local chefs. He works at the Blind Tiger and features fermented foods. Along an incredible, incredible tap list. If you are in New York City, you must go. The first chef at the Blind Tiger is an old friend of ours. She actually was at the Blind Tiger longer than that, and we'll have her tell you more about that. Our guest tonight is Louise Leonard. Hey,
yay!
Louise,
yay! How's everybody doing?
Fantastic. Welcome back to New York. You are in and out, and we know each other from the Blind Tiger when you were behind the stick.
That is correct. I was a beer maid at the Blind Tiger for 10 years almost, I would say. Ran the kitchen there for about 3 years prior to heading to the West Coast. I met a man that was somehow got me to leave New York City. I don't know how happened, but he slapped a ring on it later, so I guess it's okay. But right, I'm still wondering. but yeah, so you know, my whole foray into the beer world started at the Tiger, and I mean, you know, as a lot of people's here in the city did, it was sort of the granddaddy of them all. So
the place for education. I remember, you know, learning about beer, and I'd come for hot dog Mondays, free hot dogs on Monday, and between your and Kate Dulcich unhealthy addiction to Rachel Ray, I would watch a lot of cooking shows at the Blind Tiger eating free hot dogs.
I would make fun of her and Kate would defend her, but yes. No, actually, you know, I used to always say when you're at a bar and if the TV is going to be on, it's usually either people always put sports on because you don't need sound to watch sports. And I feel the same way about cooking shows. And so I would always love, you know, on a Saturday afternoon when I would be working, I would have the Food Network on because I'm obsessed with food and it's what I do. And I would have it on all afternoon. And you just have like this bar room full of grown bearded men who, like, I'm looking thinking, they can't even make themselves a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but they're very intrigued by what's going on the television. It's awesome.
So tell us how you got started.
Well, you know, let's see. Oh my gosh. I feel like such a dinosaur. I'm like, that's going way back. well, my family, we're really into food. My mom is Southern. My dad actually owned a restaurant when I was growing up. So food has always been a very big part of my family. And it's kind of, you know, we wake up in the morning and it's like, what do you want to eat? What do you want to eat 3 hours from now? And like, what are we going to eat later? It's like, that's what we've always been about. And so in the city, you know, I was bartending, graduated from college, moved to the city, was bartending for many years and trying to figure out what I was going to do with myself. And you know, one of the things that I always did when I would get home from work is I always would cook meals. You know, I would always be shopping at all the markets. And so I'm like, my roommate was like, you know what, I mean, aside from drinking beer, the only other thing you do is cook, so why don't you just go to culinary school? And I was like, wow, such wisdom. Okay, I'm going to do that. And so I did, and I decided to go to what is now the International Culinary Center, which is the former French Culinary Institute down in Soho. And, you know, I didn't want to leave the city. I was like, if I'm going to go to culinary school, I'm going to stay here. I mean, this is one of the best places in the world for food. And so I did, and that kind of just like, you know, it didn't necessarily change my course overnight because I continued to work at the Blind Tiger. But what then I started to do is just cooking a lot more with beer and a lot more with wine and hard liquor and kind of married like the two passions together, so to speak. And, you know, and here I am all these years later and I still cook that same way. So, you know, the food I was sort of drawn to is still the same kind of food that I'm interested in cooking and eating, which is sort of, you know, somewhat of, I don't even know if elevated is the right word, just like delicious bar food that happens to have booze in it. So
yes. So let's talk about what, before we get into kind of specifics about recipes and you know, your approach and things, let's talk about what have you been doing since you left the Tiger?
Okay, so since I left the Tiger, my primary job, which has nothing to do with booze at all, is I work as a food stylist. So I've always been a very visual person, a very artistic person, and I somehow, when I moved out to LA, there's a lot of work for food stylists. And these are the people that we spend our day making food look beautiful for either TV, film, cookbooks, magazines. We're kind of like the makeup artist to the food. You know, it's like, here's the actress with their makeup artist, we're that person for the cheeseburger. So so I fell into it randomly. It was like I just needed work, and then I've been doing that ever since. And I also do some private chefing as well, so I still, you know, I still cook food that people eat, but I also work on a lot of photo shoots as well.
Cool.
In there was also a recent competition, right?
That's correct.
What was that competition?
Well, if I do say so myself, that was a competition on ABC called mm-hmm. The Taste, competitive cooking show with Anthony Bourdain, Nigella Lawson, Luda Lefebvre, and Marcus Samuelson. And, you know, there are many shows like this on TV now. It is a show where they have a nationwide search for, this one was home cooks and professionals, and you audition, they decide who they want on the show. They happen to pick me. So I did 7 weeks filming this show. And basically every episode is a couple challenges. And you do the challenge and somebody gets eliminated, you know. So whoever shits the bed that week gets sent home. So, and I managed to survive all 7 weeks and come out the winner. I still am kind of shocked how that happened, but it did. And so I'm not going to ask any more questions.
What do you think your biggest learning from that show was? Or kind of, what did you come away with it?
Well, I think that when you go on a show like that, you really have to ask yourself, like, who am I and what do I want them to, like, taste through? This is a blind taste test, actually, this particular show. So my whole thing was, I want them, when they actually taste my food, to know that I had made it. Like, I want to be able to express myself specifically. So, like, you know, with brewing, right, you know, there's certain people that we know are, you know, this, you know, maybe this guy is just like the, you know, he's the double IPA guy, or this person is a sour beer person, you know, in type, in the way they brew. Well, the same obviously is with cooking. And I think that was, like, the biggest thing for me, that I'm like, okay, I need to let them know who Louise Leonard is. And part of that was, well, I cook a lot with beer and I cook a lot with wine and I cook a lot with spirits. And so I kind of want that to come through in the style of food that I do. So I think that was, like, the biggest thing that I had to figure out, like, really while I was in it too.
Awesome.
With that, we're going to take a really quick break and talk more with Louise Leonard after we break. I said break twice. And again, break, break, break.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with Louise Leonard,
our old friend.
Hi. Recent winner of The Taste on ABC and World of Wheezy. Is it worldofwheezy.com?
It is worldofwheezy.com, yeah.
Fantastic. Why do we call you Wheezy?
Louise. Well, you know, people always ask me if I am into Lil Wayne, which I think is hilarious because I don't.
Because who isn't?
Well, I only think it's hilarious because I like the idea of people Googling World of Wheezy, and it's basically Lil Wayne, like, everywhere, and then just one small picture of me with, like, a beer in my hand in the corner. But no, it's just a nickname, you know. I loved the Jeffersons growing up.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, Louise Jefferson was Wheezy, so I'm like, that's my jam.
Right on. I fully support that. Your jam is also, you know, cooking with beer and making that your signature style. So we were talking before the break about how to make the judges taste it and know that it was distinctly you. And that was to feature beer and ferment
wine
things,
and spirits,
wine and spirits within your cooking.
So what are some of your favorite dishes that you make with beer, wine, or spirits?
So, I mean, I would say one of the dishes that I make somewhat regularly that people are always like, oh my gosh, this is delicious. And it's simple. All it is braised lamb shanks, but I use lambic. So I do like lambic shakes, and it's a little, you know, tongue in cheek, whatever. But I find that, like, say a currant lambic, or, you know, even some of the sweeter ones, even like raspberry, the gaminess of the lamb is completely, like, softened by the sweetness of the beer. Cause I actually don't really, I mean, I personally don't sit around drinking lambics that much. That's just my own personal taste. You know, I'm much more of I'm a session pale ale or IPA. Like, I'm really simple when it comes to the types of beers I sit around and drink. But to cook with, like, there's just so much more you can do. And so, I mean, I would say that's one of them. And I've done ceviches with like white beer, with a wit beer, for example, where I'll take, like, you know, the idea of coriander and all of that and work with that just with like raw fish, just thinly sliced like white fish, you know, in the summertime, really light. You know, I mean, a lot of different. I've done different granités for oysters, but using, you know, I've done it with like different Belgian ales that seem to work really well. I've done it with some sours before. You know,
so you're using that in place of the vinegar, or kind of,
and usually, not always in place of, sometimes sure, but you know, sometimes I want a little bit of citrus there, like instead of just like chopping up some shallots and having them soak in vinegar. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll say, well, okay, I'm going to take a sour and I'm actually going to try to freeze it. And I'm going to scoop it out. Like,
okay, yeah.
Right? And, you know, and then maybe sometimes I'll add some herb into that. But as like a cold, like crunchy little thing to have on top of an oyster, okay, delicious. Yep. But, you know, I'm from Wisconsin, so I cook brats in beer. And I don't par cook them in beer because we don't do that in Wisconsin. We grill them first and then sort of reconstitute them in beer after. Okay. So right. You can actually really taste the beer really well.
And you're doing just straight up beer, not cutting it at all, correct?
Yeah, usually, I mean, I feel like in those circumstances, like if I'm in Milwaukee hanging out with friends and they've got, you know, a bottle of Miller High Life, like I'm not going to cut what's right. already short of water with more. So, but water in the best possible way, because yes. It works. You know, I mean, I feel like even with like kind of crappy beer, there's still a place where you can use it, you know? Mm-hmm. So those would be some examples. I mean, I guess with beer, I mean, wine, I do like wine poached pears. I swear I make those for every single party I ever do because they're simple, they're pretty, they're delicious. You know, obviously wine is easy to cook with. So
can I ask your favorite ceviche recipe?
Or just like kind of specifics?
No, just like give a little bit of guidance for somebody maybe that has had ceviche but never made it at home.
Excuse me. Yeah, sure. I mean, I think if you've never made it at home, like the easiest way to start, and honestly, just get some affordable, simple, like white flaky fish that, and obviously buy it from like a trustworthy fishmonger, you know, that hasn't been frozen, hasn't been sitting around, something that's just like really, really fresh. And with that, it takes about, you know, 20 minutes, if that, you know, so it's something that you can do. Like if you're having people over, you can buy some whitefish, you can slice it really thin and sort of, I like to do kind of on the bias or somewhere between, like, instead of chunked, like a traditional ceviche, it's a little bit more like, I don't know, somewhere thinner than like a sashimi, the way that would be cut. And then shaved onions, whatever chilies you like, citrus, I mean, Meyer lemon, and like, you know, I spend most of my time in California these days and citrus fruit is everywhere. So when satsumas are in season, I'll use those. I use the juice and the rind. And then it's really that simple, a little bit of salt, and you can jazz it up with whatever herbs you want, but that's like the basics.
And then you add your white beer in.
And then Then I'll add like a white beer. I've done it where I've used champagne before. So you make kind of just like a really savory vinaigrette, more mm-hmm. or less, and let it sit for 15-20 minutes and you're good.
That's it.
And the whole
It's easy.
It doesn't take long for the citrus to get the fish where it needs to be.
And just for those of you who don't have as much experience with ceviche, especially if you haven't made it home, it is a cooked food. It's just you're not cooking with heat. You're really cooking with acidity.
Correct, yeah.
So just as an FYI for those, you know, who haven't
right.
experience the ceviche as much.
Right. So. Like how, you know, with pickling, right, you're kind of cooking a cucumber just because it's sitting in a brine. And so it's, I mean, and I actually do a lot of pickling. I don't do a lot of fermenting, but I do a lot of quick pickling. Mm-hmm. So refrigerator pickling. And you're kind of pickling the fish, really. You know, you're just cooking it with acid as mm-hmm. opposed to heat.
Absolutely.
How long does it take to quick pick?
I mean, thinly shaved cucumbers, 30 minutes, an hour. Spears, 2 days, if mm-hmm. that. And it also depends on how pickly you like them, because I actually like tasting them every day to see what they're doing. Like, mm-hmm. I like it in the beginning when it's only kind of pickled on the outside and it's still a little raw cucumber flavor on the inside. And then as the days progress, you know, up to a week or 2 weeks, they take on a different, you know, flavor profile. But yeah, it's quick. I mean, people ask me all the time, like, you know, oh, I want to take a pickling class. I'm like, well, if you want to get into canning and all that and the whole process of that, and then that's one thing. But if you just want you just want to open up the refrigerator and eat a pickle, just you put some cucumbers in a vat and dump some vinegar and right. some salt in and call it a day.
When keeping your reputation, you don't want to talk about all the mistakes you made. But is there any guidance you'd say not to do for like cooking with beer, or like the don'ts of where it can go awry?
Well, I think that really hoppy beers are incredibly difficult to work with. Because let's face it, when you start off with something that's got really bitter notes, if you try to cook with it and reduce it, you know, oftentimes when you're cooking with beer, like let's say you're doing a braised shank, for example, well, a lambic, as it reduces, it just sweetens and intensifies in its sweetness, which with the lamb and a little bit of stock thrown in there is good. But IPAs are difficult. I've screwed up so many dishes trying to like reduce an IPA because I think, oh, well, this has like grapefruit notes, or this has, you know, the very floral, like, you know, aromatic rind of like citrus. And so I want that just be better if it's more intense, but it doesn't always work out that way. So I always say, if you're going to start cooking with IPAs, like start slow and like do it, you know, come up with recipes that you don't actually have to cook it. Like, you know, like a ceviche, for example, or a vinaigrette. I do a lot of vinaigrettes with beer too, just so you can kind of get that raw flavor, you know. Mm-hmm. What else? I think anything that is going to cook for a long time. I mean, I think that, you know, if you're putting a braised dish in the oven, or if you're putting a roast, something that's going to be in the oven for like 4 hours, you have to really take into consideration that everything that you put in the pot, be it the stock, the onions, the garlic, the beer, the wine, it all just intensifies over time and you can overdo it easily.
Right. I want to go back. Okay, wait, because I was confused when you first said that. What do you call the icy
granite or granita?
Yeah, okay, because I was confusing with minion.
Oh, you were confusing with the minionette. Okay, yeah.
But let's go back to that, because I actually never think about. I've made granita before, mm-hmm. like just with, you know, the old fashioned way, just like freezing liquid and scraping it.
Sure, yeah.
But I never actually have made it with a beer. So, and I think that's a great palate cleanser as well for
definitely.
Summertime, and it's a nice thing to do. Like sometimes. For us that homebrew, or, you know, you maybe have some leftover beer in your fridge that you just,
perfect.
You know, you don't want to drink. So how,
or
give
perhaps
a little guidance
if you're not
that.
Legally making an ice beer at home.
That's also true.
The ice and then you're
very wise. well, you know, you have to, I mean, you have to mix something else into it. So when I've done it, you know, whether that's citrus juice or whether, I mean, usually that's what I've done, citrus. I did one not so recently, but I did one where I made like a syrup out of fresh sorrel, mm-hmm. and it was really herbaceous and it was almost too much. So then I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to add some beer, and then I'm going to add a little bit of like fresh lemon juice. And then I added some cucumber juice to it. So it was like the herbaceousness of the sorrel, the cucumber. And I think I just used a Saison, actually, I think is what I had. And it was awesome. It froze really well, and it was just...
So you just mixed it. You didn't cook the Saison down or anything like that,
nope,
right? You just added it straight in.
I just added it straight. You could cook it. You know, the whole point with cooking, right, is that oftentimes you got to screw up to figure out how to make it better. So yeah, you know, you can reduce your beers down into a syrup and then add that in, you know, or add it as I did with this one. It just happened to work out. And I just put it in a shallow baking dish, put it in the freezer. And then with the granite, you just have to go in like say every 30, 45 minutes to an hour and kind of scrape up bits of it. Freeze it again and just keep doing that, you know, for the better part of a day. And then you end up with this icy, chunky, just deliciousness that you could just eat straight. Or like I said, put on an oyster, which is in the summer, just awesome.
Mm-hmm. What do you do with your discarded alcohol?
There is no such thing in my household.
Understood. Understood.
Or I just feed it to friends who don't know the difference. Right.
So let's talk about one of your favorite dishes. We haven't talked about cooking with spirits at all. So what?
Right. Okay. So I love to do gravlax. I love fish. So I love to do just a cured Scandinavian gravlax where I use Pernod. I've done it with vodka. I've done it with different, usually vodka, would be something that people, you'll see in recipes. So I like to use Pernod. I do a lot of shaved fennel. I do onion. I use the fennel fronds, dill, mustard seed, coriander seed, salt, brown sugar. And then you kind of take a side of salmon and you pack all of that on top of it. And then you just take a bottle of Pernod and maybe dump like one full side of a salmon. It's probably about a quarter cup. It's not really that much. But the flavor that comes out is so awesome because it's just like a light anisette, you know, tinge to the fish that like cut really thin is so tasty just with some black bread or on a bagel or crackers. I mean, those crackers that you were talking about sound awesome and it would probably be delicious with that. Yeah, so yum. That's...
Now
yeah.
I'm really hungry.
And, you know, and I don't sit around drinking Pernod. That's the other thing that yeah. I like to... I think I started testing out a lot of, like, ways to use different spirits that I don't necessarily drink, you know? I mean, I like the idea of sitting in a cafe in Paris with, like, a mother's milk, you know, it's just, like, Pernod and water and looking fabulous in the summertime, but I wouldn't do that. Like, I wouldn't drink that. I like the look of it, but I wouldn't drink it. But using it in this application with gravlax, I love it. So, yeah. You know... I'm trying to think, like, I mean, bourbon is so easy to use. I mean, obviously in like barbecue sauces. What other spirits have I been working with lately? Well, I styled a book, Brooklyn Spirits. I'm sure you all know about it and everybody here in New York City. And if you don't, you should go look at it. It's pretty and delicious.
Yes.
And informative.
But, you know, I was working with so many different liqueurs and different, you know, alcohols in that book that because I've been gone from New York, you know, back and forth for the last 6 years, you know, there are all these distilleries that popped up that I had not heard about. And I got to taste every single thing that everybody in Brooklyn was making. And it was great. And one of the liqueurs is a sorrel liqueur. This dude, Jack, makes this liqueur that's called sorrel. And it's basically like a hibiscus liqueur. And it's delicious. I think you could just pour it over ice cream and it would probably taste awesome.
Well, I haven't had that yet, I don't think.
Nor I.
It's pretty, too. I tried it at one of the parties that was surrounding the book. They were doing it as a hot mulled wine. And they add that so that, you know, hibiscus is kind of tart. Mm-hmm. So it added this really nice tart quality to something that I normally just associate with like a dark spice flavor profile, like cinnamon and black pepper and things like that. This added this like Caribbean little like punch to it that was really cool.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time, but before we go, there's a, you know, shows like this and other shows that are out there. We're really trying to drive home the importance of beer on the table and that it stands up to other things. And one of the challenges on The Taste was a beer challenge, right?
It was.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, you come in the morning, you know, you're on these shows, you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you make sure that the makeup artist get rid of all of your wrinkles so you can look as best as you possibly can. And then you show up and you're like, all right, what's it going to be today? What are they throwing at us? And they're like, beer. And I'm like, yeah. Until I went into the pantry, because there's a pantry of ingredients that you have to work with. So, you know, they pretty much say go, and you're running around like a crazy person. And I go into the pantry to start seeing what there was to work with. And I'm like, oh my God, it's like 10 different... It's 10 different light lagers from around the world. So it was like, you know, Tsingtao and Bud and Beck's, and it's basically every single beer exactly the same. And then Guinness. And I'm like, well, okay. And then I started overthinking the whole thing, because instead of just saying, okay, I'm just going to take the Guinness and make like a Guinness, like an Irish stew, you know, just something like straightforward, delicious, that everyone would be happy to eat. I'm all like, well, I don't know. Isn't everyone going to make an Irish stew? I mean, I'm sure everyone's making an Irish stew. So then I'm like, well, I guess I have to use Bud. I don't know what to do. So it's like the one thing I know the most about, I'm all like, ah! But I didn't get sent home, so that's all that matters.
That's fun. Lise, thank you so much for joining us on From
Out About
tonight.
So welcome.
Such a pleasure to see you again and have you here. And you come out once a month because you teach here as well, right?
I do, yes. I teach food styling courses at the International Culinary Center. So I'm usually here every other month.
Fantastic. And we can find out more about you at worldofweezy.com.
That's correct.
Which is also your Twitter, at worldofweezy.
That's correct.
World of with an F.
And Instagram, all of it.
All of it.
Yep. Weezy with a Y.
Weezy with a Y.
Yep.
On Easy Street. I don't know what I meant by that at all. Forget about it over here. Hey, thank you to Heritage Radio Network, our intern, David Sharfstein, our photographer, Jaren David, our engineer, Liz, to Jack Inslee, and to Aaron Fairbanks, and to the entire cast of crew of all the shows on Heritage Radio Network. I'm so proud to be a member of this freaking place. Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.